the Millennial Express, plowing ever onward through a northern winter. From station to station, bringing the dissident right to you.
Welcome back to Millennial 2023. I should first say that the previous stream had to be cancelled. Just technical issues. It's unfortunate, but too bad. Maybe next year we'll have another chance. But I'm now here for the final stream of tonight, and this is with Lucas Gage. I've been aware of Lucas for many years. I think possibly as far back as 2014, but I'm not sure. I think he had his YouTube channel before I started mine in 2014. So, Lucas, could you introduce yourself to the audience?
What's going on, guys? My name is Lucas Gage. Now, many of you may say, wait a minute, I remember you with a different name. And that name was the infamous Angelo John Gage, which, by the way, legally has been destroyed. It no longer exists. We'll get into the whole story, but many of you are like, wait, I know this guy. I've seen him before. Yeah, so that's the old name that I used to go with. That was my birth name, but I legally changed it to Lucas Gage, so I'm really Lucas Gage now. And we'll go into that all, my friend. We'll talk about the whole shebang with that narrative. But yeah, I'm glad to be here. This is the first time we ever spoke. And I've known of you for all these years as well. And finally, we get to speak after, you know, how many years is that? Like 2015, I think I jumped on the scene, 2014.
A lot. That's 9 years. I think also I was banned from Twitter for like 4 of those years. Yeah. I was banned from YouTube for quite a while. Well, I still am. 3 years now, I think. So this happens, and you can coincide with people at different times. And now we're both back on Twitter, X. So yep. Here we are. So it's about time we finally chatted. And yeah, I remember watching your videos back then. And you seem different now. I think probably we're both quite different than we were then. We're older, calmer. Yeah, I would say so. All right, so let's start with at the beginning, because I want to talk about your life and your experiences. You started as a, well, you take it up where you want to. What happened when you were 18? Where do you go from there?
Yeah, so I was actually born in Italy, so we'll go that far. Came here when I was 2 years old. Lived in New Jersey my whole life. And my grandfather was in the Air Force. He fought in the Korean War. He was a major. He was an intelligence officer. And so, you know, he was in the military. His grandfather or his father was a Marine. And my father wasn't anything. But when I came here when I was 2 and lived my life in New Jersey until, you know, when I was 17, I was in the dentist. And I heard on the radio that a plane hit a tower. One of the Twin Towers, they go, that's a very bad accident. And I was like, well, that sucks. Then moments later, or a few minutes later, another plane hit the other tower. I was like, hey, there's something wrong. So, you know, I'm just sitting there like something's going on. I do my dentist appointment. I go home. Now, I lived in a town called Warren, New Jersey. And my dentist was in Greenbrook, which is like at sea level. And Warren was like above, right? So on the way up, there's a town called Greenbrook. And in Greenbrook, there's a place called Washington Rock. And this is where George Washington actually looked into the New York Bay Area to see the British coming. And that's where he did there. So there's like a whole rock there with the plaque. And I went there on 9/11 while the buildings were on fire and saw the entire skyline just like smoke and fire and everything. Like not fire, but just completely smoked out. And I was like, wow, this is really bad. So I have 2 sisters. I was a senior at the time. My other sister was a freshman and the other one was not in high school yet. Went there, said, are you okay? She goes, yes. And I went home. I said, I'm going to just watch this thing. And I'm sitting there watching the towers on fire. And in my head, I'm like, are these things going to fall down or something? I don't know. I'm not a physics person. So just sat there. And then eventually they did. And I'm like, oh my God, all those people must have been killed in there. You know, all the crushed bodies. So it was devastating to me at 17. So when that the whole day, everyone was crazy. You know, America was under attack, all this other stuff. And I'm just thinking, we got to get these people. So you know, at 17, you can't join the military immediately. You have to be 18. But I sought out the recruiters when I was 17. And I called the Somerset recruiting office in New Jersey. I said, I want to join. He's like, well, you can't join yet because you're not 18. But what you can do is join the delayed entry program. And I wanted to become a Marine because, you know those like career days where you go to school and like they bring different careers in? I saw the Air Force. I saw the Army and all these, the Navy. But I saw the Marine Corps. I loved, I have my uniform here. It's such a beautiful uniform, the colors and everything. And I was attracted to the Marine Corps, and they're the baddest branch. I was like, of course, I want to be Rambo, right? I want to be this guy. I'm 17. I was young. So when I called the recruiter for the Marine Corps, they said, you come in. We'll sign you up the delayed entry program. What this is you go there, and you hang out with the recruiters every Saturday before you get deployed to boot camp. So kind of like it shaves off a year of your reserve. So you do 4 years active, and then 4 years reserve. It shaves off one. It acts like, you know, whatever. I said, okay, I'll do it. So, you know, I did my, you know, delayed entry program every Saturday. You go there, do pull-ups. You run a few miles. You learn about the Marine Corps history, whatever the case, right? And then after high school, I graduated in 2002. 4 days after high school, I went right to boot camp. So there was no party at the beach. One more, you know, hurrah with my buddies. It was literally get on a bus, a Greyhound bus, 16 hours, freaking drive to South Carolina, Parris Island, which during the summer, which is the worst thing ever imaginable. So, you know, I get there. I didn't even know what I'm getting into, man. I never watched any movies in the Marine Corps. I never watched Full Metal Jacket or any of these things. I had no clue what I was getting into at all. But once you get off that bus, or once you like get to Parris Island, all these dudes, get off my bus right now, get off my bus, rah, rah, they're just screaming at you. I'm like, what the hell's happening? And they get on the footprints. And they have these footprints lined up at the door, these yellow footprints. You have to line up at attention. I'm like, oh, I made a mistake, bro. Like, are we allowed to curse on this? I don't know if your shows are.
Yeah, yeah, you can curse. Yeah.
I'm like, I fucked up. I fucked up really bad. And that, dude, and that moment for 3 months straight was micromanagement, being yelled at, everything you fucking did. Was like the way you hold your tray. It's like you have to hold it like this because of when you march, you know, your rifle like this. Everything had to do with everything else, no matter what. Now, the first day we go to eat food, they're like, which hand do you guys eat with? I go, my right hand. Now, from now on, you're eating with your left hand the entire fucking time. So all of boot camp, I ate left-handed. And we have to sit up straight like this. We have to have our feet 45-degree angle underneath, and we have to eat like this. And we can't look down and eat. We have to eat like this. And we can't talk like all this shit in boot camp, dude, for 3 months straight. So that in itself is traumatic. But I did 3 months of boot camp.
What is the purpose of that?
It's discipline.
Right. Yeah.
Like I said, like when I hold the trade of 90-degree angle, that's also because when I hold my rifle when I'm marching at a 90-degree angle.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah, of course. But I just wondered about the using eating. Your other hand. You know, what's
you
the
blow
point?
Your hand off, then you have to eat the other hand. Right. Everything they teach you. And it's also to make you stronger, right? They want you to be able to overcome. One of the things they used to tell us is adapt and overcome. So if you lose your right hand, you better use your left hand. Things like this. So, and eat, dude, we used to eat so fast because there are times where we screwed up. Someone was chatting. Everyone get out right now. So we couldn't eat. So we get in there, we go like this, we eat as fast as we could. Then we had to go on the parade deck and do marching and all the physical activity. So 3 months of boot camp, I was 18. I had no clue what I was getting into. Boy, was that a fucking wake up call. But anyway, you're stuck there, so you're not going anywhere. And then after boot camp, I graduated and we get to go home on leave for like a week or two. Now, I wasn't an infantry guy, right? So if I was an infantryman, I would have stayed there, would have went back in infantry school for 6 months or whatever. And you go shoot people, this and that. I was a combatant. I wanted to be an engineer. Well, I wanted to be a sniper, but the Marine Corps puts you where the hell they want you. They say, we need engineers. You're going to be a combat engineer. So instead of going to infantry school, we all do Marine combat training because all Marines are riflemen. So it's not like the Air Force. You don't have a rifle and you're some tech guy. You know, every Marine, no matter what you do, you have a gun and you're a rifleman. You could be used to do anything. So we went to Marine combat training was, I think, 2-3 weeks perhaps. Then after that, I went to engineer school. Combat engineer school, it's 3 months. Graduated top of my class, so I was doing well. And then I got to the fleet, they call it. It's like getting to your career, your job. It was in North Carolina. A month into the fleet, February 14th, 2003, I was deployed to Kuwait. A month after that, into Iraq. So I'm 18 years old, my first tour, boom. So after boot camp, nearly not even a year later, I was in Iraq. And the first tour was the actual invasion. And my group was, my battalion was 8th Engineer Support Battalion. We were attached to the 1st Marine Corps Division from California. They were infantry. So our mission there was to help them, to support them and their mission to cross bridges that we had to build, by the way. So we had these like bridges. They're like Lego pieces, not really Legos, but you connect them and you throw them over a bridge because the enemy would blow up the bridges and not let us cross. We also had these other bridges that were called IRBs. You back them up into the water and they'd open up like this. And then you have the tugboats. So we did these things. And that was my main mission, was to do this a few times. But that was the war, man. And that's where I saw the most death and destruction. That's where I saw people die. I saw Marines die. I never shot anyone. I never killed anyone. No one in my platoon or my company got killed, thank God. But others I've seen, civilians die, or they were already dead. Completely destroyed this car. I mean, dude, there was nothing when I got day three when I got in, because the infantry went ahead. The Air Force does this bombard. It was like already over. It was crazy. The military might that we have unleashed on these people had no chance. So that was my first tour we did for five. It was 5 months. Now understand, the Marine Corps is not like the Army. The Army goes in for 2 years straight. Marine Corps goes in 5-6 months, goes home, right? We secure a beachhead. We do something like this and we come out. So I did five months of my first tour, got back home. And then literally a year later on the February 14th, again, 2004, no joke, the same time, just a year later, back to Kuwait, the same exact base, and then back this time to Iraq, to Camp Al-Assad Air Base. This time our tour was 7 months long. And so we did it where we had to do like humanitarian things. They used to tell us, well, you have to win the hearts and minds of the people because we blew up their whole country. So now let's go fix everything. So, you know, as a combat engineer, we built fortifications, barbed wire. We did security. We did this in the first tour as well. I mean, the first tour was so bad, bro. I didn't take a shower for 30 days. I was in my camouflage and also in mop gear, which was the chemical weapon gear. So I had my boots and then I had rubber boots over my boots. We were sweating through our boots and my face was crusted. I had like my goggles on. So when I took them off, it was white and I was black. My knuckles were black. I forgot to mention this because it's a funny part. The first tour, in the shower for a month. It was crazy. Like my camouflage was like concrete because of sand and the sweat. So the first time I took a shower was like magic.
I heard once that when like they incinerate the camouflage, the clothing after it's used because it's so dirty that there's just no point cleaning it. Is that
bullshit? We clean it with our hands, man. We had wash bags. Okay. We clean everything. Look, the first tour, you had to dig a hole, take a shit. I'm not joking. We slept on the floor. The second tour I want to bring up because the first tour was like that, the most degrading. You know, the first time I sat down on a couch and had a soda was months in. I was like, oh my God, like you start missing home because you had the shit in the floor. Sleep, you're barely getting because you're hearing shit explode. And you have fire watch. You got to take 3-hour turns, some people. And believe it or not, the desert, it's so fucking cold at night. It's freezing. I was wearing my winter gear when I was on fire watch. I forgot to mention all this because I'm going too fast. But so see, the first story, it's just dehumanizing.
You can see why it's optimized for young men because, you know, 18, 19, I guess that's when you're at your physically most tough.
Right, yeah.
Resilient.
You're there.
Can you imagine imposing that on 40-year-olds?
No, you can't. You can't.
I don't think they'd, yeah.
So, I mean, when I got a boot camp, I was 160 pounds. Now I'm like 230, but, you know, I was a little guy then. And, but the first tour, I just want to contrast to the second tour. So the first tour, completely the most degrading, dehumanizing, like stupid shit you can imagine, right? It was kind of funny, though, because you're so dirty, it doesn't matter. The second tour, we were at Al-Assad Air Base. Now, here we had barracks. Here we had better food than we had at home at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Because on Sundays, we'd have a steak and lobster. We'd have meals. The gym, we had 24-hour gym. We had a PX where you could buy everything you want. So it was interesting. We played volleyball. We'd run around the base. But this time, like I said, this tour was to win the hearts and minds, humanitarian efforts. We did minesweeping. So there were roads that we had to sweep up. Two of my friends hit landmines. They didn't die. The truck just twisted. It was really crazy. He lost his hearing a little bit. But we did minesweeping. We did explosive ordnance disposal, EOD, where we'd actually find caches of weapons, caches of mines and artillery. We just blow them up, bro. We would literally, I have all these pictures of us putting C4 stacked up on all these explosives, drive a mile away, just blow it, see a mushroom cloud explode. It's crazy. So the second tour was like that, last 7 months. But I'm like, why am I even here? Like, we're playing spades. We're just sitting at the, we're going to the gym every day. We're like having a good time, you know, like what's the point? And I noticed we were taking a lot of oil trucks. So I'm going this way and an oil truck is going that way. Like I'm
Let's pause for a minute there. Cause I want, I should have asked you this earlier at this point. So you saw 9/11.
Yeah.
You actually physically saw the, all of that. What was your notion when you were in boot camp and then when you're on your first tour of duty and all that, what was your understanding of what you were doing and what was going on?
Well, the
apart
first
from obviously time, the Europe, you know, I mean the broader situation.
The first time I went in, I thought I was a hero. Like we're saving these people from Saddam. I fell for the narrative hook, line and sinker, although it didn't make sense because Saddam didn't do it apparently, but they said he did the anthrax attacks and he had weapons of mass destruction. And by then, you know, the Americans were actually united at once. We were actually, you know, everyone had an American flag and we called them freedom fries because the French wouldn't help, you know, stupid crap. Like it worked. It really did. So, I mean, I didn't think about it much. But the second tour, I was like, what are we doing? I mean, we sit around all day, play spades. We, you know, we're in these barracks. We go to the gym. We're eating lobster and steak. I don't like lobster, but steak. And what's going on here? And I started noticing the oil trucks. So I'd be driving in a convoy to go to fix something, and then oil truck. Then I saw the mercenaries, these guys from Blackwater, dude. They're driving in 4x4 Nissans, backwards hats, Nikes, everything, shoes, they, beards. They didn't give a damn. They had no one to answer to. And I'm like, my buddy's like, you know, they make $120,000 a year. I'm like, really? We get nothing. And these guys make $120,000 a year, do whatever they want. They were even committing war crimes the first tour. But no, very bad stuff. And I was like, okay, this is weird. Here's what happened, though. So after my second tour in Iraq, 7 months, got back home. My ankle was getting messed up. I had a bad ankle before I got in. But, you know, all the hiking in boots and all the wear and tear from just wearing the gear, you're wearing 80-pound pack, whatever the case, it weighs on you, literally. So, like, all right, Gage, look, you could leave now if you want. You have a year and a half left of your service. Or I could put you on light duty where you don't have to do all this crazy stuff, marching, running around, PT anymore, no more, just – go behind a computer. I was like, you know what? I'll do that. I'll finish my 1.5 years so I get my my GI Bill and all the benefits I'm supposed to get. Because apparently I don't, but I don't know if he lied to me. I never found out. So I got behind a computer. And I keep hearing about Fallujah. The Battle of Fallujah was so bad. I'm like, all right, let me Google Fallujah. And this is where I learned what was going on. So I saw these pictures of white phosphorus being used on Fallujah by us. I'm like, wait a minute. We went to war with Saddam because he had weapons of mass destruction and chemical weapons, yet we are using white phosphorus on civilians and people in Fallujah. And the pictures I saw were like charred skeletons, like people like burnt to a crisp. I'm like, but I thought we were the good guy. And then there you go. I started looking things in, looking up all this stuff. And then 6 months before I left the Marine Corps, I had 6 months left in my service. My friend Matt, his brother, sent him a CD, Loose Change. And I never, look, after 9/11, I didn't watch the towers collapse ever again. Like they weren't just for showing them over and over, right? So I get Loose Change and I'm looking at it with my friend. I'm like, wow, wait a minute. Why did they fall so fast? What the hell? You know, I started thinking again. Like there's something wrong with this 9/11 stuff. So then I got out of the Marine Corps and I went to community college. Well, first I went to Italy for 3 months to see my family. My mother's side is all, I was born there. So half my family lives there. Went there for 3 months, had a good time. Got back home, went to community college after all these years. I did pretty damn good, 3.63 GPA, then 3.83. And while I was in college, I started taking philosophy. And I started taking mass communications and psychology and writing. And I started thinking for myself again because I was a robot for 4 years.
How old were you by this time?
I was 22. So I'm 22 years old in college, all these young kids. I'm like, okay. And I'm doing well because my discipline from the Marine Corps is there. And I quit. I get the good grades and I leave. I don't come back because I get to the summertime and I start partying at the beach. I'm like, yeah, I never did because I didn't get to do this. You know, I didn't go to college and have this fornication drug life. You know what I mean? So I'm like, yeah,
absolutely. When you're 18, yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah. So I'm 22. I'm at the beach with all these girls. I'm like, no, I don't want to go back to school. And I didn't. Then the summer went by. I'm like, you know, I should have stayed in school. Got all my grades forgiven, meaning that I wrote a letter, you know, I was in the Marine Corps, it is messed up, and then, okay, we'll withdraw all the withdrawals you got. We'll give you back the exact same GPA, same exact courses, just take them again. Took them all again, same teachers, you're back. I'm like, yeah, I'm doing it again. Literally the same classes, And at the same exact time in May before my finals to get my BA or my AA to go to Rutgers, I quit again. I'm like, no, this ain't for me. And I left. And I'm like, something's wrong with me, man. Because I noticed this, like this happened. Then my friend offered me a job like, hey, bro, you want to be an energy consultant? This is a job that has no cap at all. You can make thousands and thousands of dollars a week selling energy, right? Because there was a time where you could sell energy to people directly rather than going from the energy. Utility company doesn't make energy. They buy energy from companies. So in New Jersey, they deregulated the market where you could just tell the customer, pick these energy companies. The utility has to send it to you anyway. It's just going to be 15 to 20% cheaper. And this is legit. And my buddy just jumped into this, niche of work. And it was blowing up really fast. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll do it. But I started noticing, you know, I get up at 1 p.m. I had energy some days and others I didn't. I'm like, there's something wrong with me. I quit that. I did massage therapy school. I quit that. Then there was like, there's something wrong with me. So I started looking up NLP and like Tony Robbins. So I got into this whole Tony Robbins thing. Like maybe this guy could help me. And I'm like, what does he do to his clients? What is he doing on these like seminars? You know, snapping his finger, using words, NLP. I said, you know what? Let me learn that. And this is the one thing I actually went through with. I went to New York City. There was it was called the Center of Positive Change and Hypnosis, International Center of Positive Change and Hypnosis, where you learned NLP. And I did it for 2 years. So I actually finished it. I did 1 year. And then the second year was Master Practitioner. So I finished it. I was like, now I'm a Master Practitioner. And I helped myself going through this process. I'm like, I'm going to start a business. So I started life coaching business. I even got like an office building. My friend quit that too. So everything I do, I just start quitting.
How old were you then by that time?
Right. I was 24, perhaps 24, 25, right. maybe 25, I think. So I noticed that there's something wrong. And I started talking to my psychologist, you know, you should really get some help with this. And it turns out PTSD was sinking in slowly. By the way, my relationship with women were crazy. I was super promiscuous, super doing drugs and partying. Like I was trying to medicate myself the entire time. Because, you know, you go from a robot to like, here's life. No one tells you how to get back. You don't understand. And you're depressed and you're angry and you're frustrated. Then I learned my entire life was a lie. Like I was Catholic. I stopped being Catholic. I was about America. Now I'm like, I'm anti-globalist and anti-machine and all that. The conspiracy theories. I read a book from David Icke, This Fucking Big, which he's a key, by the way, to my awakening later on. But I'll get to that. So, you know, I'm doing this whole, every documentary, every conspiracy theory from Flat Earth to aliens to you name it. I went through all of it. And so all these years I'm going through that and I'm like depressed and I can't work and I can work and I don't and I quit. And I'm like, dude, you got PTSD. That's what these guys tell me. I'm like, no, I don't. Like, no, you better make your claims. And I did. I made my claims at 30%. They gave me 30. Like, no, you got worse than that. And so over the years, that actually went higher and higher and I got all the paperwork to prove it. But during this time, I kept learning more about the fucking world. So going back to David Icke, when I was in Italy, my friend gave me this book before I left. It was called The Lion Sleeps No More. And in that book, David Icke mentions Rothschild Zionism. It's the first time I heard that word. I was like, oh, okay. I kept it in my head. I never thought of it again till years later. So this is where Angelo John Gage wakes up to the whole white genocide. If can I say that on here? Is that the British? Is that a bad thing?
No, that's fine.
Okay, the Great Replace. Okay, so this it's like 2011. I learned about this whole, you know, anti-white stuff. You know what I mean? And I'm like, okay, I make a video called Call of Duty. Everyone needs to wake up against white genocide. And this goes viral. This is where Angelo John Gage is born, right?
Right. That's interesting. That's 2011 when you got into the white genocide, great replacement stuff.
2011, 2012, something like that.
I think that was before I did. I think.
Yeah, I woke up. Right. Yeah, I woke up and that's where like everyone saw this video. And it was a shitty ass video. Horrible. I was terrible at speaking. Not like I am now when I make my videos today. Horrible. Like, but David Duke saw it. Everyone's like, come on my show. Everyone put on the map instantly. And, you know, people are asking me, do the white voice. This was the first time I did a podcast called The White Voice with this young kid named John Adams or something. Did that for a while. And I did like activism online. I was telling people, wake up. And at that time, this was like bad stuff. You know what I mean? This wasn't like okay to say anything about white people. This was like, you're evil as hell. You're a Nazi. You're anti-Semite. You're racist. And so eventually over time, I go on the Dr. Duke show. I go on every freaking white nationalist, you name it, whatever it is, separatist, doesn't matter. on the map there, and I'm doing this activism. And eventually, a young man, if you know Nathan D'Amigo, do you remember him?
Yeah, Nathan.
D'Amigo reached out to me. He says, hey, bro, do you want to be our chairman for the National Youth Front? I said, okay, I'll do it. Why not? That was like 2014 or 15. And I said, I'll do it. So I did, this is where I really get on the map, because I start pissing off the ADL, the SPLC. And, you know, at that time I was reading like other stuff, Mein Kampf, Dr. McDonald's books, David Duke's books. And I'm learning about this white genocide stuff and learning about the history of these people who keep pushing it on us. And I really, and I'm just saying it out loud. I'm not, I never used a fake name before. I used my real name, Angelo John Gates, from day one. I had no idea, just like boot camp, no idea what I was getting into, right?
If I knew, I would have been anonymous. I've got to say, I was exactly the same.
I had no idea, bro.
I didn't realize they're not going to just see this as you discussing ideas. They're going to go to war with you. I really went into it with my eyes closed. As did, well, it sounds like you did as well. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, you read like Mein Kampf, and he says, you know, if the Jewish press attacks you, and I'm like, if nothing happened to me, let's suppose I said all this stuff and nothing happened. I'd be like, oh, well, maybe that happened years ago. It's over. They don't have power today. But because they started attacking me, ADL, trolls, death threats, I'm like, what is – this guy's right. This guy said – not just him, Cordiano and all these other people, different nationalists from different parts of history. You know, all these things that I'm reading from David Duke and Kevin McDonald, and I'm reading, I'm like, these guys aren't – so not only is this bad stuff happening to my people, Europeans in general over the world, these people are still doing it. It's not just another phenomenon. So, like, now, and I saw it was them, the ADL, SPLC, Nazi, anti-Semite, death threats, you name it, Antifa, all this stuff. So I joined Nathan's group. I become the chairman. I start doing in real life activism. I start going to colleges, plastering posters. This woman's anti-white. You know, Seda Grundy, she said that, white students are a problem population. I'm like, so we went to Boston. I went there personally with you guys, put it out there. I'm banned from the premise. I could never go back. We just put a post over her face and said anti-white. One guy at Rutgers, this guy, Kevin Allred, you know, white people, they're all bad, but some are different shades of white that are bad. So we're all bad. Okay, anti-white did the same thing. And everyone's like, hi, you lose. I'm like, no, we don't, because he still has his job proving us that he is anti-white, and so is the school. So we won by pushing this. Now, back then in 2015, if you remember, anti-white wasn't really in the, you know, it wasn't really out there. You know, we had
that was before the it's okay to be white meme as well, which I think was 2017. Right. It's also before the alt-right thing, which was really 2015, 16.
Well, we have like the Bob Whitakers, we had Horace, the event, we had all those guys, you know, Red Ice, all the old school people pushing it, and I'm pushing it, and my group's pushing, other groups are doing it, but it wasn't in the mainstream yet. So my wife gets, I finally settled down with a woman I was dating for a while because I was Mr. Promiscuous. I said, yeah, I better stop and just pick one. Beautiful woman, great. 2015, she's pregnant. And so I do this 9-month thing with Nathan. I said, bro, I got to step down. And I step down from the chairmanship because she's going to have birth. And then he takes over and he turns it to Identity Europa, and it goes from there. It goes on to its own. That's its own thing. So when I step down, I become a father. Things change a little bit, but I'm still me and I'm doing my own thing. But, you know, my name is destroyed still. So I keep pushing, doing my own thing, and clash with some heads and figureheads out there. You know, there's some drama a little bit, no big deal. And I'm like, you know, I was such a fanatic when it came to this stuff. Like my sister, for example, we stopped talking because she was with someone who was kind of mixed. You know, she half Indian, half white. And I was like, oh, you can't do that. You're racist. I was really extreme with my views. And I wouldn't have the same views with my friends, though. It was kind of hypocritical. So, you know, my family suffered because of this. All these things were happening. My name is destroyed. So go down the line about a year ago, actually, when I was 37, because I've always been telling the truth, but we all got nuked in 2020, right? So I had my own thing going. I tried another group, the New Frontier. I tried other things. I started talking to Cynthia McKinney, trying to get different races together against the same foe, if you will. And they were just nuking.
And also COVID as well. You should fit that right. Timeline.
That's exactly what happened. The COVID is what nuked the channel, because I had some guy, Dr. Shiva Aradori, come on, and they're like, oh, nope, misinformation. So I know there's just so much stuff to put into this story, but the point is, at 2012, I kind of like said, okay, maybe this is too much. I was on Gab one day, and I was sitting on Gab venting about everything, like, oh, these people. And I said, this is just poisoning me at this point. You know, I lost my voice. I'm no longer in any groups. Like, what am I actually doing? And I just kind of stopped, and I deleted my Gab with 4,000 followers and just vanished. And then I tried one more time with this other group. And I said, yo, you're just not a group guy. And I just left. And I'm like, I'm done. And I told my wife after all these years, I said, you know, I did my part. You know, I was on the ground in real life doing the things, the stickers, the posters. Me and my buddies and all the people at that time, we got the term anti-white into the mainstream. I can retire. So I said, I'm like, I'm done. 36. I'm 36 now, 37. I said, I'm not happy with this stuff. It's not going anywhere. What can we do? It's over. Let's just, you know, I'm going to be a father, protect my children, and hopefully some other young kids, some Generation Z guys come up and fix everything. That's what I was thinking. And so I said, all right, you know, I told my wife, I'm going to quit. And she goes, really? I go, you know what? I'm not only going to quit. I'm going to start a new life. I'm going to change my name. And well, actually, before that, I had a breakdown. This is what happened. So I was experimenting with psychedelics, if you will. And my favorite drug was ketamine. You don't have to answer the question or not, but I used to do a lot of club drugs.
I've heard of it, yeah.
So DMT, all these other things, shrooms, but ketamine was my favorite. And I kept taking ketamine a lot to like get out of my body and kind of learn my spirit, if you will. But eventually I stopped. And at one point I was so depressed, I snapped. I said, this is fucked up. My whole life, it's like, I'm done with that life. I'm done with this person. And I had a midlife crisis. And so I did the meditation stuff with it as well. I was listening to Alan Watts. You know what Alan Watts is, right? You're British. Oh, I love Alan Watts. He kind of snapped me out of it. But the last thing I read, first I read Marcus Aurelius' Stoicism, you know, his diaries. Then I read, I was listening to Alan Watts. And then the final thing that really snapped me was the Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu. I don't know if you know this stuff, but anyway.
I'm not familiar with that.
No. Yeah, this is Asian philosophy from the East. Go with the flow, this and that. Because I was trying to control everything, right? Because, you know, when they cut your voice off, what makes it sick is that you can't even appeal your account. You can't do anything. So I felt like so impotent, so mad. But I became like the enemy. I was so angry, so hateful, so annoyed, and so frustrated with the world that I couldn't control that it made me sick, like literally. I was poisoning myself. And my son said to my wife, she said, Mom, why is Daddy always mad? And I wouldn't get mad in front of him. But I wasn't there. I wasn't present with my family. I was on the internet, even though I was on the table. I was always out there fighting the JQ. I was always elsewhere. I wasn't present. So this meditation process, the ketamine, all that other stuff, stopped the ketamine, stopped doing that crazy shit. And I started just meditating. And I just snapped one day, had this nervous breakdown. My life is fucked up. I told my wife, I'm done. No more politics. I don't want to deal with people. I'm not meant to do it. This is bullshit. I'm quitting. She says, all right, what are you going to do? So I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to change my name. Well, first, I'm going to rewrite my book because I had a book I wrote, my old name. I don't want to throw it away. So salvaging the book, I edited it. I got rid of some chapters that I thought were irrelevant, made it sound better. I put Lucas Gage. That's my pen name. Then I said, you know what? Why don't I just become my pen name? Pretty cool name, right? Angelo John Gage, that's gone. What if it chases my son at school? What if it, you know, comes up another at a PTA meet? Hey, your dad's, you know, because I live next to like the New Jerusalem. I live in Brick, New Jersey. The next town over is called Lakewood. It's literally 200,000 Orthodox Jews. It's like the biggest population of these people. And I'm like, this is going to come up one day. And I'm as concerned about it. I said, no, let me just start over. So I said, I'm going to change my name. I was like, are you crazy? I'm like, I am crazy. I am. And I feel like I need to do it. I need to start over. So the plan was change my name and just write self-help books the rest of my life. And that was the plan. And I was doing it for a little bit. And then the war in Ukraine started. And then I look into who's doing this. I'm like, oh, no. There's no escape from these people. Zelensky, Newell. I'm like, there's nothing. And I'm like, and everyone's like,
it's like a war film franchise when there's always a new one.
And I'm like sitting back here and I'm like, no, I'm not going to say anything. So the first few months I said nothing. I got back an X with my new name, right? And so I make a video about this. I finally say something. I make a video. And my friend...
Oh, hold on a minute. I should ask. When was this? Was this after Musk took over?
Musk took over. I made a new X account with my new name, Lucas Gage. Right. Completely new from scratch. So I make a... I'm talking to my friend, Partisan Girl. You know Mimi, Syrian girl. You've seen her. She's a good friend of mine. I've been friends for years. And so I had this, I just ranted one day, like I always used to do, into the camera. I don't know what to do with this video. I said, Maram, look at this video. She goes, holy shit, man. You know, if I post this, it'll go viral. I'm like, oh, shit, I don't know if I want to do it. She's like, you sure? I'm like, I said to my wife, Kate, I don't know, man. I feel like I should post this video. And Maram's like, I don't know if you should. I was like, you know, fuck. It's like, do whatever you want to do. I won't mention them, okay? She's like, all right. I won't talk about those people. So I said, all right. I said, Maram, post it. It went viral, bro. It went so viral, I got the attention of Clayton Morris from Redacted. He's like, hey, man, you want to come on the show? And this guy's a million followers at Redacted. I'm like, oh, fuck. And here I am, bro. Get sucked right back in. But this time I'm like an anti-war guy, which I always was. But I try to, you know, I stayed away from the other people behind it. I just said, you know, the parasite class is a term for everyone. And that's what I was using. In fact, the Zionists who attacked me years ago, who got the feds to my house, the police to my house and all this. And they repeated this, by the way, a few weeks ago or last month. They came after me. Hey, you back to attack Jews? I said, no, actually, I'm a new person. I don't hate anyone. I never did, actually. But let me explain. So I spoke to the guy who sent the feds to my house on a Zoom call. I'm like, look, Dave, I'm like, I don't hate you, man. I just look what your people is. I know, but it's not all of it. I know. And he kind of talked me out of it. And we kind of left the conversation with, look, I don't hate you. You don't hate me. But you understand where I'm coming from? Yeah, sure. Okay. But we don't agree about Israel, right? Yeah, we don't agree. Okay, bye. Then I went on this Jew Function podcast, two Jewish guys, one's from the, they do Kabbalah, one's in Israel, one's over here in New Jersey, cool guy, very nice people. And they're like, look, man, we know about you. You want to talk about it? I said, I'll talk, sure. How to overcome this like anger with these people and kind of try to solve anti-Semitism. But I said, look, you guys got to clean up house. You know, I get where we're coming from. And it kind of like this mutual thing was pretty nice. And people are like, you're cucking to them. You're like, I'm just being nice. I want to talk to everyone. Because I was done with this whole, you know, attack everything. I'm just, let me just go in here and be this mediator. Maybe I could save everyone. Maybe I could end this feud for millennia. That's what I thought in my head. So I made this video that went viral and it got me back on the map. I gained like 4,000, 5,000 followers in like a month or some stupid number. 7,000 it was. And then one day I get an email saying that I look up my name because everyone's like, yo, I'm getting my account back. I'm like, really? I look up Angelo John Gage and it's back. Like, shit, my old account is back. Okay, well, I'm now Lucas Gage, so what do I do? So I say, all right, hey, everyone, go to this account, and I change my name, because now you're allowed to change your name. So I started with 24,000 followers. So over the time, bro, here I am back, and I'm trying to be cool with the Zionist people in the Jewish community. I'm not trying to offend anyone. I'm saying it's not all of them, it's some of them, and da-da-da. And over the months, it's like I start saying things that, like, piss them off. These people I'm cool with, hey, bro, you shouldn't post it. Well, why not? It's the truth. I mean, I'm not talking about you, right? And eventually it just gets really bad and like they don't like what I'm saying at all. I'm like, wait a minute, you're really supremacist. And it's like, so fast forward now, I'm back. And when they, you know, when they struck this October 7th situation happened, I started with 24,000 followers. Now I'm at 200,020 almost. I'm about to hit it tonight. Okay, so I gained like 100,000 followers last month, and I keep getting thousands per day because I just, you know, Angelo John Gage was concerned with things, but this guy doesn't give a fuck. This guy's like, I came back like Mr. at peace, centered, confident, no anger. You know what it is, bro? I got rid of the anger because I learned during my meditation process and all that, that I can do the same action without the anger and feelings of impotence and fear, right? I can play chess either furious or cool, calm, and collected and do it anyway. I don't need anger anymore. It achieved its purpose. So when I cleansed my soul of this anger, which is justifiable, of course, but no longer necessary, I came back as a completely different person. And people see it in my personality. People see that I'm funny again and I, you know, everything's better in my life. Because Angelo John Gage was at war the whole time. He never took a break. Remember, I came out high school, went right to boot camp. After the Marine Corps, right into this whole conspiracy theory stuff, right into pro-white activism, right into pro-whatever, and I never took a break. So here I am. I finally took a big break, changed my name, started over, but got sucked right back in because it wasn't my time to go away. And I know it's not, and I give into it. I don't resist it anymore, and I'm not concerned about outcomes. I just be me. I don't listen to people when they criticize. I don't care. Like I used to care about every hater. Oh my God, you're a Fed, you're a shill. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And I'm trying to sit there and explain. I'd say, yes, I'm a Mossad. Bye. I just don't care anymore. I block people. I don't give a shit about e-drama. I don't talk about it. I don't care. And this has just made me effective. And I've gained so many followers. And I do everything in a way where I try to unite everyone. So it's like, I'm not just pro-white person. I'm a pro-humanity in a sense. And it's not cucking to like immigration or anything stupid like that. It's just like, look, we all have the same enemy. Let's focus together. And they really hate that, by the way. So I'm doing this. I'm building this allegiance of people around the whole planet against Zionism and Jewish supremacy. And it's working. And it's working a lot. And I feel like this is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. The other path was not right. It was a good thing to do to protect our people from the attack. But that's also a problem. If we only care about our people, we put ourselves in a corner against the rest of the world, which they're telling they got to attack us. But I say, hey, listen, why don't we all turn on them? They don't like that. So this strategy has been working. The results show for themselves. And that's where I am today, my friend. You know, so I came back with a new strategy, as a new man, literally. So Lucas Gage is literally a different person than Angela John Gage. It wasn't a shtick. It wasn't to hide my past, right? It wasn't like I didn't get facial surgery. It's not like I changed something where it's like, oh, it's not him, you know?
You're so it
yeah, it wasn't some kind of gig to get away from it. It's just not my time to go away. So I said, all right, I'm going to come back more effective and I'm going to let loose, but I'm going to be smart about it. And I'm going to really speak a way that the people can understand, you know, because back then I was like, well, do I like do an intellectual thing? Do I just do a pure Marine guy yelling? And I'm like, you know, I'm just gonna do both. I'm just going to all out and who cares what I say and who cares what happens. And people love that genuine, you know, they love my rants. That's what they say. Even though I curse a lot, I say to myself, maybe I shouldn't curse. But then it wouldn't be genuine. So people really are like, dude, this guy is raw.
It depends on the subject. And
of course,
some people can carry off swearing. And yeah. Some people, it just sounds silly.
You can't do it at a formal gathering. You know what I mean? You can't do it like, like if you're at an American Renaissance, you can't just be like, wah, 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 wah. You can't do that. Or like some kind of presidential thing. But I do it in my own home. It's a different thing.
Here's a question. Because I've had a similar thing where, and I actually alluded to this at the beginning, where I'm much more calm now than I used to be. Yeah. I used to be very emotionally up and high. Like, I actually wondered if I was bipolar at one point, but I don't think I was. I think I was just a very turbulent guy. And over the last few years, again, late 30s, I've really calmed down. And I don't feel things so extremely anymore. There's not euphoria and there's not misery, depression. I'm much more in the middle all the time. And you'd think that that would sound kind of dull. But actually, I don't miss the extremes at all. This is much better. That's not to say that I don't have bad days, of course. No. But they're not as extensive and they're not as bad as in the past. And I think this is maybe just part of leaving being a young man and becoming middle-aged. And I also think that there's youthful ego. That's another thing. But I think the male ego is a kind of necessary thing. It propels you out into the world. But it's dangerous. It can poison you as well. I mean, what would you say about this kind of thing?
Well, that was the biggest transformation. So the ego, and I wrote this in my book, where you have to tame the ego. Otherwise, it's like the ego's like a guard dog, right? If you don't tame your guard dog, he barks at everything. Everything's trouble. Everything's a problem. And it's just a maniac. And then you go barking mad, right? But if you tame your ego, it becomes your guard dog that you could sick on people and sick on things that are necessary, but also keep them quiet when there's no reason to yell. So this is what I learned about with my spiritual awakening was that, you know, we are not our thoughts and our feelings. We are that which observes our thoughts and observe and feels our feelings. There's something that feels it. There's something that observes it can't be you. You're looking at them. You're feeling them. So it's not me. So these thoughts in my head aren't me. Why do I identify with these thoughts? You sit back and look and go, huh? So, and you learn this about yourself. You're not your thoughts. You're not your feelings. You're not even your body, technically. Your body belongs to you. Well, what's you? The consciousness. You know, Alan Watts said, you're that thing that lies behind your eyes. That's who you are. You're not even your eyes. It's behind it. You're that clear entity. So I was like, yeah, he's right. You're some kind of mental energy, something. So I learned this. I go, wow. And you start to learn that you don't have control over anything, really. Like, not even your decisions are yours. Think about it. You really don't have free will, in a sense. Some people are. You can debate this all day. But once you say, I don't even care, and let go and trust the universe, I know it sounds New Agey, your life will change. Because one of the things from Taoism is you go with the flow. That's where it comes from. You go with the flow, and you trust the universe. You do things without it's like the act. It's the art of non-action. It doesn't mean don't take action. It's going with the flow where it's like, you either run up a river and try to defeat the stream, right? Where you're going to get tired anyway, it's going to blow you away. Or you go with it and go surfing. like a surfer, takes the wave with him. He doesn't go against it. It goes with it. So you're doing a non-active activity, which is going with the flow. You have the energy of the universe behind you. You're indestructible. You're indefeatable. Before, you're, I want to change the world. I got to stop everything. I got to stop the bankers. You can't. All you can do is be the best you. So when I came back and I did this, I get all these emails. You're an inspiration. I look up to you. You changed my life. I saved this. I'm like, what? Just by being myself. Now, before I used to get angry. Now, I still do the yelling shtick because that's my way of, that's my performance. It's not fake. It's really me expressing this, you know, justified frustration and anger. But it's not that I'm actually frustrated or angry. It's a performance art, like of oratory. It's my presentation.
Yeah, and you're not Italian after all.
Right. So it's like, it's either you can sit there and be like, hello, my fellow friends, we are under attack and we must fight. You could do that, which is fine. But I'm like, let's be passionate. Let's move people. Because the one thing I learned is that the spoken word is more important than the written word. I'm sure you remember that quote from a very special book. And this man learned this. To move the masses, you have to move them emotionally. You can't sit there in a monotone voice and bore them. You have to move the people because they're very passionate. They're like, the crowd is like women. It's like a big woman. And you have to seduce her and woo her. You can't just be like, hey, you're hot, let's go to my house. It's not going to work. Even if she wants to. Like, this guy's weird. He just ruined the whole thing. There is this wooing of the audience. There's this wooing of the masses, right? And it's not deception. It's a way to inspire them to take action. Because a lot of people out there, they have all these answers and all the truth, but it means nothing without action. You know smoking is bad, yet you smoke anyway. Didn't save you the truth, did it? It's, you have to say, oh, it's bad for you. I'm going to start taking action not to smoke. Now you save yourself. So you're right about that. The thing is, a lot of us, when we're younger, we have a huge ego. We want to dominate women. We want to have power, social status, all that. You give this all away. Say, I'm going to serve whatever, God or some other cause higher than you. And all of a sudden, you have so much energy because you're not trying to control parts that you can't. You know, you're trying to control your crazy girlfriend. You're trying to see what your friends are saying, what this or that. You let go of all that. Let things work on their own. Suddenly, of all this energy to write a book, to do podcasts, to speak the truth, to paint, to whatever you want to do, go to the gym. All this wonderful energy to create, to co-create with the creator of the universe or God or whatever you choose, nature. And now you're actually contributing society. And now you become a living example for other people to emulate you. That's what makes it like... That's what makes one attractive. It's not like you're living in your own world, but you make the world, like you become part of the world by leading by example. That's what it is. So, you know, there's a difference between someone who's struggling for power and give me this, that. You could see that they don't have any power. They're powerless. If you're struggling for power, you don't have power. But if you're like, yo, take it. Give it. Go ahead. You get it all back and you're giving it away as if you already have it. And there's this like magnetic... There's an attraction to you for this. And this is where people are like, I'll help you. Now you're delegating power. Okay, you do this, you do that, right? Now I work alone. I do my own thing. But I work with people. Like, you know Keith Woods, right? I'm sure he bought it up. Banned the ADL. He's like, hey, man, you want to help me with this? I said, okay, helped him out. I had no idea where it would go. Exploded. We've literally changed the course of history, I think. Just getting Elon Musk to attack the ADL. He didn't sue them, but that started another thing. And it started another thing. And everyone woke up and it became this movement by this Irish kid who I'd never seen before. He just, hey, bro, you want to help? Yeah, no problem. Boom, exploded.
Yeah. It was yeah, and the thing is, old Twitter was probably constantly trying to stop this kind of thing from happening. You know, they must have been putting enormous effort and resources into preventing spontaneous events like that from developing. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
So the brakes are taken off. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, it grew on. So Keith, and we spoke about it in the background, a few of us, and I said, Keith's like, we'll use your frame, because I remember NLP, we'll frame it like this. We'll turn these people against their own, when they did. And then it backfired, because they all kind of like put it backwards, like Lib's a TikTok. Well, she got mad at the ADL, but then she's like, hey, help me. Hypocrite, we see you. So the strategies that we employed, we talked about, and then it grew on its own. And like all of the world got involved. It was out of our hands. Greenblatt couldn't blame. He didn't know who to blame. He's like, oh, it was the Nazis over there. It was this, you know, it was the marching people in the street. It was Nick Fuentes. No, it's everyone. Everyone was frustrated. Everyone was mad when Linda Yaccarino met with him, with Jonathan Greenblatt. So it was a really grassroots movement started by an Irish kid that I ever met in my life. And I talked to him all the time, but interesting how it works. So there's this decentralized resistance, and this is part of the flow. Now, there are people trying to control things. It's not going to work, but you have to go with the timing, with the flow of the universe. And that's what I believe. And this, my friend, literally takes away all the stress in your life. Not all of it, but it takes away unnecessary suffering, because a lot of people, they get in their own heads. I'm not doing enough. I suck. I did this wrong. I did that. And you're already suffering already. Why add more to your life?
See, what I would say there is you've got to learn to forgive yourself.
Yes.
It sounds trite, but it's true, because you can analyze something that happened in the past, something you did wrong. With a lot of things, you've just got to let go of it. You know, it doesn't matter that much. It really doesn't matter that much.
You cannot make a mistake on purpose. Just remember that. Any mistake you made in your life, you thought it was the best choice at that time with the information you had. That's what everyone does. No one says, I'm going to make the worst choice. You can't. You choose, not even you, actually. This is why I don't believe in free will, exactly. You don't choose anything. Everything chooses the best situation it thinks based on the information, state of mind, things that happened in the past, things that may happen if you choose that. And you don't know it's a mistake until hindsight. Oh, that was a mistake. There's no way you could have known. So why beat yourself up for it? Now, there's things that may haunt you. You lost 10 grand. You did something bad. And you're still paying off the door. You lost money gambling. You have a mortgage you shouldn't have. It's still haunting you today. But hey, it's not going away if you're mad at yourself. Why add extra suffering? So you're going to suffer. You're going to hit your toe in the morning. You're going to lose a loved one. Things are going to happen in life. There's suffering that is necessary that happened. Then there's unnecessary sufferings when you suffer complaining about the suffering that is happening no matter what. That's why I wrote in my book, these are the things you transcend your ego. You're not your thoughts. You're not your feelings. You step back. So these are the things I learned about myself to do, because I used to want to control every person, every single thing, who's gossiping, who's saying the wrong thing, who's doing that. And I let it all go. I literally do not care about anyone's opinions about me. I don't care about my haters. I don't care about any, literally don't. I just wake up in the morning. What can I do to serve my purpose? That's all I care about. And if I do everything I can that day, I go to sleep happy. Now, by the way, as you mentioned, it's not like these extremes like happy and sad. It's like I'm content. That's the secret of life, is to be content, not happy. Because if you're always happy, there's going to be a downfall. If you're super happy, like ecstasy, and then you're down, depressed. If you're just content with what you have, you know, I'm not a materialistic person. I told you earlier, someone threw a massive donation at me, right? I was like shaking, like, what the hell? I never in my life seen this in my life happen to me. My wife's like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, I feel bad. You know, I feel really bad to get this. And this was, you know, not the first time it's ever happened. Like another one sent me another thing a while back, but I'm like, I'm making all these connections with these big names and all these different people are following me. And I'm like, what is going on in my life? I'm shocked. People are like, how are you not banned off X? Like, I don't know. People are like, you're an agent. I'm like, dude, I don't know what to tell you. This is just, everything's working.
Yeah. See, that's a problem, isn't it? When people think that if that person's successful, then it must be because he's a Fed.
Well, I mean, I don't know what to say to these people, because I don't even know why I'm still going. I'm pushing the limits of free speech. It's probably because I'm smart about it. And it's also probably because I literally block anyone that even seems like an enemy. Like, you idiot, blocked. I don't care who it is. You dumb bastard, blocked. Anyone who says, if I see an Israeli flag, blocked. I think I blocked so many people, there's no one to report me. But I also, when I do my X work, if you will, I do it strategically. I'm like, hey, check out this video. What do you think? And it's like something we shouldn't. What do you think of this? Or I do polls and things like that. Sometimes I go head on. I don't give a damn. But it's free speech. I'm like, I'm a free speech absolutist. And I don't preach. I don't break the rules and things like this. But I don't care about the people who think I am, because what are they going to do anyway? And I used to spend time, like I said, Angela John Gage, you sit there. No, I'm not, bro. And I used to argue with some anon that, who are they actually? I don't know who they are. Have they put any skin in the game?
Yeah, that's
are they getting death? Bro, this last couple of months, death threats, doxing, phone calls to my wife, texts to my wife, my email getting spammed with like hundreds of, you know, you just signed up for Apple Magazine. Like, I didn't do that. Like, someone found my, like, all this crazy shit. They sent the police to my house, the state police to my house with fake anonymous tips that I have weapons, I'm going to kill people. And they're like looking at me like, this guy's not a threat. I know what they're doing. And I recorded. I don't know if you saw that. I recorded the whole incident. and they got picked up by Turkish news.
I didn't see this.
But oh, yeah, they came to my, I recorded the police this time. It was the same guy from 3 years ago. He's like, hey, I remember you. It's like, what are you here for? Oh, well, these people in the Jewish community are concerned about what you're posting on X. I'm like, oh, what is this, China? Like, I post something on X. And
see, that's interesting because in America, we always hear about the First Amendment in America.
Yeah. Well, like he says, he gets things across his desk. And I'll show you the video if you want to see it. But it went all over the place. People, I went on Stu Peters. I went on all these different shows to talk about it because everyone's, I'm like, this, the reason I recorded it was because this is America and this is what's happening. People are coming to the police are coming to my house because of posts on X. Now, this is not the only time. Back when COVID happened, okay, I put something like, if you force shots upon us, we have shots for you, and ours have more side effects, right? It's like a play on words because I'm implying the Second Amendment. You're not, the cop comes over. I'm like, officer, if you came in here with a needle trying to inject, what do you think I'm going to do? I mean, come on, you think I'm going to let you do it? He's like, no, I know what you mean. I'm like, that's what I meant. It was a play on words. But these people are being told by someone, I'm like some like, you know, dangerous neo-Nazi, whatever the hell person, terrorist, when I'm not. And the state police came and said, do you have any registered weapons? And I said, no. He's like, well, I know you don't because I know the registry. I'm like, well, yeah, I don't. He's like, do you have any ones you don't have registered? I'm like, no, I'm literally unarmed. And I'm showing the world this because it's like these people were told that I'm armed and dangerous by an anonymous tip. That's what these people do. So I've dealt with the feds before they came to my house years ago. It was four Thanksgivings ago, I believe. And they wanted to like make me a CI because of my nationalist activism. They're like, hey, do you know these people? I'm like, no, I don't know.
What CI?
Confidential informant.
All right. Okay.
So they met me the first day to talk about when my email came up and my social security came up. Because remember my group, I did fundraisers to get that printer. Remember Identity Europa had those beautiful posters? Well, because we got something called the trigger printer. We bought an actual industrial printer. We did fundraisers for it. So the first fundraiser was GoFundMe. Got nuked after we got all the money because of Antifa. Another one, I forgot which internet one it was, got nuked. And I said, all right, send a P.O. box. 3 days later, all the money. Bought the printer. Months later, Nathan did it. And so my social security number was attached to the bank because I had it in my name. So years later, they're investigating. I don't know which one. I don't know which group or which person. And they're like, oh, we just have some questions. I'm like, okay, come in. I have nothing to hide. So I spoke to the feds years ago, and they talked to me about my past, and I'm no longer that person, da, da, da. And they said, well, we want to meet you again later. So okay. The second time I met the feds, they took me out to eat, got a slice of pizza and some wings, and they explained to me, hey, you know, maybe you could help us with something. I'm like, what? Would you like to help us capture people who are way past their First Amendment? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, violent criminals, you know, white supremacists, this. And do you know what Adam Moffin is? I'm like, I've heard of them, but I don't know who they are. But would you be comfortable buying drugs and weapons? I'm like, no, I'm not Rambo. I'm just sitting to these guys, like talking to them. They're explaining to me how it works. So this is why I don't call people feds, bro, because here's how I'm going to explain it to you in your audience, right? Because they explained it to me. If you're a confidential informant, if you're a Fed, there is no paper trail. There is no, you just got deposited a Covia bank account, $5,000. It doesn't work like that. They pay you in cash envelopes. So there's no paper trail that you're even getting paid by the feds. Nobody knows you're an informant other than your handlers. Okay. So the people who hire you, their handlers, they know who you are. And then there's no paper trail. So the only way you can be a Fed to someone is if you admit it to someone. Like some people, the guy was telling me, that a lot of these drug people are feds, you know, they're narcs, and they'll actually tell people, listen, I work with the FBI, give me your drugs, right? To get more drugs out of them to sell on the side, like idiots. If you tell anyone you're a fed, you're finished. No more. Deals off. So you can't tell anyone you're a fed. You're not getting paid by wire transfer. It's all cash envelopes. And the only people who know you're a fed are your handlers. So if you get caught with wire, that's your problem. You lose. So the only way you can get caught is if you blow your cover like an idiot, or you're in front of the person you're putting in jail in court as a testimony, as a witness. You see that? So when everyone's like, this guy's a Fed, that guy, how do you know? Do you have the proof? Do you have any transfer? You don't have a transfer. I know you don't, because they get paid in cash. So either the guy's in court, or how would you know? So I don't call anyone Feds. I know there are people who could be Feds, you know, the way they act. But I know I don't call anyone that because I know what the structure is like. Now, I rejected their offer, obviously, because the second I came home, I made a video. Hey, you know what just happened to me? So it's like I blew my own cover, if you will. You know what I'm saying? By saying I met with them, I can't do it, right? So I said, I'm not doing this stuff. So the funny part is, you know, when people say Fed this, I just laugh. I go, yeah, sure, I'm a Nazi. I'm a Nazi. I'm a Fed. I'm a Jew. Yeah, okay, bye. I don't care.
Yeah, I've had these accusations as well, and many others, all of the above, and many, many more. What were they like? These FBI agents, were they just? Would you have seen them and thought, all right, he's gonna jump into a helicopter now and fly back, or did he just seem like a normal?
No, well, the ones that came to me was a man and a woman. Now the woman was pregnant. And the man, he said he was a lieutenant in the Marine Corps. I don't know if that was a lie or not, just to gain my affection, you know, fellow Marine. But they were nice, and they felt like they were doing, I didn't think they were trying to trick me or anything like that. People are like, you're an idiot. Why'd you talk to them? The same thing happened to these cops. Again, like, why did you open the door? I'm like, because I'm not a criminal. They're going to get something. No, they're not. Look, I'm a father with two kids. I want to know what the feds want from me. I want to know what they think of me. And I want to know if I slam the door and the cops get out of here, they're going to be like, that guy has guns. That guy's a problem. If I just open the door, come in, talk, he's a normal guy. These people are crazy. These schizophrenics telling us that he's armed and dangerous are crazy. Not him. So one, I defuse the cops. They're human beings like us. I feel like there's so much demoralization. Like, no, they're pure evil. They're going to kill you. Maybe in some cases, right? Not this case. This is a small town. I know people, right? So I spoke to these people, the feds, you know, I guess they're patriotic, but they even agreed with me about Trump and stuff. Like, yeah, I'm like, don't you think, I'm like, agent, whatever her name was. I'm like, you know, you're gonna be a mom soon. I mean, aren't you concerned you're gonna bring a kid in the world with his 99? She goes, yeah, I know. It's kind of weird. Like, it's not like they're like left-wing people. You know what I mean? Like a lot of these cops, a lot of people in the military are conservative, believe it or not. You know, so they're not.
Yeah, of course, that makes sense. I don't see how it could function.
You want to serve your country. You want to protect what you were born with. Now there's like this woke stuff happening and this diversity training. But the people I ran into were normal. And this is when Trump was out there and they agreed with me. Now, you can say they're lying. I don't care. I'm just like telling them my concern. I'm like, don't you think we shouldn't have the board? I'm trying to dude, if you watch my video with the cops, I'm red pilling them about shit. I'm like, here's an opportunity to red pill cops. But anyway, so the feds were nice, but I wanted to know what they thought of me. Like, am I a threat to this community? What'd they get told? It was just like, no, we're doing an investigation. Your Social Security came up. You're not being investigated. Tell us about this. Tell us about that. What do you think of this? I go, no, I'm not interested. Thank you very much. And that was the end of it. Same thing to the police. They come over here. They want to make sure I'm not some crazy person. You know, people get swatted all the time, actually. It's not a legal thing to do. That wasn't swatting. Swatting is when the SWAT team shows up. But yeah, so I've never had a problem with authority. And the way I look at it is this. If you're shutting doors and telling them to go fuck themselves, if I was a cop, I'd be like, yeah, that guy's hiding something. There's something wrong with this.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, hey, I don't see it. I mean, people who say that you should just do slam the door in their face, someone who says that can't have ever been in that situation. Because obviously, if you do that, they're going to think, right, we need to bring in the tanks.
Well, maybe we're going to work next time. Yeah, because let's suppose I told the state police, none of your business, close the door. Yeah, Your Honor, maybe we should get a warrant. Now they got to come to my house, right? So it's like now there's a problem. Now it's like, it just goes away. He knows I had no weapons because I had no registry, right? There's nothing there. I have nothing. I've never done anything wrong. I'm not a criminal. I don't care. A lot of these people who are paranoid, they're the ones who think everyone's Jewish, everyone's Mossad, they're the ones that close the door. And they're not wrong. Technically, you don't have to speak to anyone. You have your right. You could say, I'm not interested. Goodbye. But again, I'm a father. I want to know what these people think of me. I want to know what the government thinks of me, what the police think, just so I know for myself. My wife goes, what the hell was that? I go, oh, well, obviously the Jewish community is upset with me again. She goes, oh, well, of course. I mean, look what you're writing. I said, well, am I writing anything wrong? The cop's like, no, you're just, this comes off. I go, I'm just putting pressure on people who are bombing babies. It's a sensitive topic. We understand. Anyway, but you know, this all goes back to remaining cool, calm, and collected, right? So as I said earlier, like I had this midlife crisis and I snapped and I cleansed my soul of this anger, man. Again, it's justified. Everyone watching right now, you could be angry as you want at everything and you're not wrong. But what I'm trying to show people is that you can achieve the same goals without any anger, without the poison that anger brings, right? like, let's suppose you're an executioner. Okay. Your job is to cut off heads of criminals. You just do it. There's no anger involved. There's not even, it's not even personal. You can just do the action of destroying your enemy without any anger at all. But if, again, if you play a chess game, when you're furious, you're going to make a mistake. If your opponent's cool, calm, elected, calculated, and you're, and he's triggering you, like you play poker and someone triggers you, you're going to make a stupid mistake. That's why enemies want us triggered. They want us mad. They want us to do something stupid. It's something illegal. They're waiting for it because the system's stacked against us. They love it when you go out of your crazy mind and do something stupid, say something crazy. Not for me. I'm a cool, calm, and collected. Now, you see my videos. I go out there. It looks like I'm in it, but I'm actually very passionate. I'm directed. And I'm trying to inspire people not to be afraid and to reclaim their free speech. And that's what people tell me in every email, man. I love you so much. You say things I wish I could say. And you've inspired me not to be afraid. And that's the biggest thing, man. We have all the information out there. We have all the documentaries. We have all the intellectuals. We have all the books we need. Now it's time to get people to change their attitude, right? That's what it needs to be. The people who rule us rule by fear. They rule by consent. They didn't put a gun to our head. Now, yeah, of course, integration, they did that, literally bayonets. But to get to that point, they corrupted our politicians, but they were already corrupt. Like, you know, the corruption that we see in our government is a reflection of the corruption we'll literally tolerate. People don't like to hear that because you and I don't tolerate it, but there's millions more who do. And we're outnumbered. What can we do, man? We're going to be freaking Rambo. It doesn't work. So there's an awakening that must take place. And I thought it was years ago, man. I thought 2014 Facebook, you see whatever you want, greatest story never told on every freaking page. Like, oh, everyone's waking up. No, now it's happening. Thanks to the people in the Middle East, thanks to the Israelis, I know it's a big topic, they are doing all the heavy lifting and all the power structures we're seeing just come up on their own. They're evoking themselves. Oh, we're scared. And I don't want to, we don't have to get into that, but that's what's happening, man. So my life has changed dramatically because I learned to let go of things I can't control.
That's a key sense, thing. That's a key thing. And I think detachment is important as well. Now, I won't claim that I've mastered this, but I definitely have learned to not care about some things. Because, as you say, you can't control everything. And also a lot of stuff just doesn't actually matter.
Nope.
So just let go. I do think that's a key thing. But I wouldn't want to be a self-help guru because I don't trust myself to be wise enough yet for that. Maybe in 10 years.
I've gone to some seminars and listened to these people and I've learned all that. They're still human. You know, they're still having affairs or they're still doing drugs. Everyone's human, man. You got to understand everyone has a problem. Everyone has a vice, whatever. Just turn those vices into turn your addiction to the gym. That's what I do. I go to the gym 6 days a week. Instead of partying and chasing women, I go to the gym. You know, that's what I do. So that's an addiction, if you will, but it's a good one. Go hiking every day. Do martial arts. Do draw every day. Something like this. Turn your vices into something positive, right? But no, really, it really comes because look, we are fighting the most powerful mafia ever, and it's not going to be easy. And so to think that it's going to be easy, you're going to really have some, you know, heartbreaking moments there. Like you're going to feel impotent. You're going to feel like I can't do anything. All you can do, and I said it earlier in one of my videos, said all you can do is what you can from where you are, and nothing more. There's nothing else expected from you. And some of us are in different positions in our life. Some of us have more money. Some of us have more influence. Some of us have connections. Some of us don't. But do what you can where you are with what you got. And if you do it every day at the best of your ability, what else can you ask of yourself? You can't do what you can't do. You can't go where you're not. And you can't do with what you don't have. So what's the problem?
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And there's no need to feel bad about it. I mean, you can only do your best. So just do your best. And it's only if you haven't done your best that you should, you know, be feeling bad about it.
If there are people people like myself, they say I'm on the front lines. Okay. Well, help me out. Help me grow. Share my videos. Do whatever you want. And it's not about donations. People donate. People have said to me, dude, I'll do your website. I'll post this. I have this skill. Share your skills with other people. I had a guy come up. He fixed my garage for free. I got a new garage at cost. He's like, bro. I'm like, you sure? I'll give you more. He's like, nah, bro. This is on me. I'm like, why? He's like, bro, you're speaking for me. I wish I could say what you say. You're a voice of the people. I said, wow, really? So like, I'm starting to realize that what I've gained, this influence, it's very important, not just to me. Like to me, it's like mind boggling. It's even happening. I've never had this attention on me. I'm an introvert, believe it or not. I'm talking a lot, but I'm very introverted. I like to keep to myself. I like when the house is quiet, you know, I'll surf the web and, you know, whatever. And I'm just like, man, people really look up to me now. And it's like, I have a responsibility to make sure I do right by these people. So I make sure I tell people, don't you ever think about sending me a dime if you're broke. You better go to the gym first. You better pay for food first. Take care of your family. The only people that should ever send me something is if extra stuff. Like, oh, here's $5. Okay, I don't care. But I didn't want your money. I tell people, don't donate. Don't. I need you to help me grow. What's more important is follow me on X. Tell your friends to follow me. It's the influence. It's the voice that matters. The money, you can give me $5 trillion. If I have no freaking reach, what does it matter, right? So I tell people, help the people on the front lines. That's the minimum. If you can't be in the front lines, that's okay. Help the people in the front lines. Again, every army has infantry. Then they have artillery. They have logistics, support, medics. Pick your position and do it, and you'll be fine. So, because you know, someone like me who is on the front lines, I say, I'm not doing enough. I should have done more NRLF activism. You know what? Actually, the truth is, brother, NRLF activism is actually very dangerous, and it's not even going to cause that much. Like, it's not even that much amplification, because it depends on the media. If the media doesn't report on your NRLF activism, it's like it never happened.
Yeah.
If it trends on X, the whole world sees it. And I used to be the kind of guy that said internet activism is stupid, because I was Mr. NRLF guy, right? And I'm not saying NRLF activism is bad or it's stupid. There's necessary. But the last thing I did, I went to that Rage Against the War Machine rally. And I was there, and it was okay, and I met some people I networked. It was cool, but it didn't stop the war, and it barely got any coverage, and nothing changed. I was like, really? It didn't do anything. But what we did with Band-Aid ADL, wow, that shifted the narrative, and that trickled down to other things because it pissed off the ADL and made them overreact, and it pissed off this person and that and this and that. And Elon, we just shifted history. We just shattered the Overton window in a way. And it's not just us, everyone else involved and other people jumped and things happened from the internet. And I said to myself, I'm an idiot. I used to make fun of anonymous people. Why don't you show your face? It's not their place, man. And why? Why should they get fired and lose their life from wherever they are? So I took it all back because I used to be Mr. Military. Get on the ground. Let's go. People like that. But it's not right for everyone. It's not made for everyone. And that's okay. And I don't want people to think like, you're doing plenty. As long as you help something happen in the cause, whatever your cause is, I don't care what, fighting cancer, whatever it is, as long as you're doing something to help somebody that you look up to that needs your support, then you're doing something. But if you don't do anything but complain, and there's always these complainers that do nothing and everyone's doing it wrong, I'm like, these are the problem, right? They sow doubt. This person's a fed, this one's a this. Who cares about these people? We don't even know who they are. But as long as you do what you can for where you are with what you have, it's all you could do. And so letting go of the things you cannot control. Because like I said, I was in the front lines a lot. Like, oh, I got to do more. And it just drove me nuts, dude. Now I'm like, I don't care about outcomes. I'm going to do the right thing at the right time and see what happens. And boom, it just works. That's all I can say. So I want people to take from me on this podcast today and Millennial is that you got to be easier on yourself. You mentioned it. Forgive yourself for your mistakes. Don't beat yourself up because life is going to beat you up anyway. Why add more abuse to yourself for things you cannot control? All your mistakes that you made, there is no other way. Another thing is, man, is that people think there could have been another way. There was no should have been or could have been. That's literally impossible. There only is what is. How things are is how it is, period. There was no other way. It's a fantasy to think that. It's a fantasy. Oh, I wish I could have. Yeah, everyone wishes. Everyone wished they bought Bitcoin when it was a dollar. Okay, I should have bought it when I was a dollar. You kill yourself over that. You just have to go with what you have now. Everything that you've ever done in your life has brought you to this point. And you have to adapt, overcome, and push forward. This is your test. Let's see if you could overcome it. That's it. So I learned a lot from Stoicism. My book actually is reflective of Stoicism. I loved how he wrote his book, and I wrote the same way. And Alan Watts was a big influence. If you guys don't know who Alan Watts is, look him up on Google and just listen to anything. Anything he says, just listen to that guy. It's his beautiful voice. Great stuff. And then the Tao Te Ching from Lao Tzu really let me let go of things. This was the biggest thing in my life, man, because those of us who want to change things in the world, we want to make sure everything's under control and micromanage and all this. And that just causes more stress, man. So all you got to do, like I said, do what you can from where you are with what you got. And there's nothing else to complain about. So as long as you do that every day, or maybe every other day even, and something, look, and sometimes you screw up and you're human. Right? I make mistakes too. I get mad at stuff, you know. Yesterday, me and my wife got in an argument. We barely argued, but we did. And then you get over it and you move on, you know. But I'll tell you what, guys, having children does change your life. It's one of the most beautiful things in the world, you know. And I've been around, listen, I've partied, have tons of women in my life. You'll never, there's no amount of women that'll satisfy you. You just have to make a logical decision to find a good woman and raise a family. And when those kids come out and you look at them and go, this is what I'm here for, to protect and fight these children. So all your little fantasies and all the things you wanted to do, I could have been a billion, who cares? Just be a good father, be a good mother, go out there and do your part and make the world a better place. And whatever level you can, even if it's like run for freaking mayor or join the PTA or be a baseball coach, you know, or be a teacher, anything, just be a person that you guide the next generation in the positive way, counter to what the enemies are trying to do to our children. And you've done so much. You know, every one of us remembers one of our favorite teachers. All of us. You know, we have one teacher, a math teacher, a science. Oh, I remember him. He was so funny. And they're ingrained in us. So our teachers, our parents, these are the biggest figures. But today people are watching like streams and like, you know, Dr. Disrespect or some gamer. He's not a bad guy, but I'm just saying, you know, we got to get back to our children's lives. We have to get back and to take, we got to take the leadership role that has been pretty much stripped from us, especially Europeans, I think. Because every other group is told, hey, you know, follow this guy. This guy's a leader, that. We're not allowed to have our own groups. But we got to start having our elders too. We got to start having people who can guide our people back onto the right track. Because right now we're in this self-destructive phase. It's like this pity party. Like, you know, we're not allowed to think and we got to ask permission. None of that. I say no more token anybody, no more nothing. Just voice what you want from this world. Say what you really feel and do not have any care what people say. It's truly becoming fearless because, again, the parasite class and all our enemies, they depend on our fear because they rule by consent. As long as we're afraid and say, please don't call me those names. Here, take everything. Take my country. Take my wife. Take my kids. It's like, of course they're going to do it. But you say, I don't care what you call me. I don't care what names. And I'm not saying lose your job. I'm not saying be stupid. But I'm saying stop being afraid. And if you want to be strategic, be strategic. Don't just say, I'm playing 4D chess. I'm not saying, no. Be strategic. It's fine. But like I said, guys, it is about literally clearing your soul from the anger and frustration that, again, rightfully you have it. But if you hold on for it for too long, it will poison you. And that's what it did for me for a long time. Do you know who Culture Thug is?
Yes.
He's my friend. So we talk a lot. He pretty much retired. And he's like, bro, taking a break's the best thing for you. I said, yeah, man, you're right. Because he's pretty much retired. I said, when are you going to come back, bro? Come on, this is the best time. He's like, no, I'll wait. But he used to tell me, bro, when I met him a long time ago, he's like, bro, you never took a break? I took a 3-year break. It was the best thing I ever did. I've never taken a break. So I did take my break and it changed my life. But the point is, you know, thinking that you're going to take a break, the world's going to collapse is not the case. You'll notice when you take your break, if you need one, things keep going. It's just, you're not the only thing that matters in the world. And when you're trying to help the world so much, you feel like if I stop, everyone's going to die. No, they're not. The world's going to keep going. So be easier on yourselves, I'd say to the audience. I say, don't hate yourself for the mistakes you've made and just accept things how they are and learn to overcome them. That's what it's all. If life was easy, it'd be so boring. You know, if every day was perfect, you'd be bored of that. You'd start making up problems, right? When I was in the Marine Corps, like I said, when I was in Iraq, we had absolute nothing, shitting in a hole. I missed a couch. I missed a nice like hamburger. You know what I mean? Like I started missing the little things in life. We take for granted so many things, bro. We take for granted that we have legs. There are people who have no legs. I look at these kids in Gaza, blown to pieces. They're finished. The one girl had no arms or legs. I'm like, this poor girl. And I'm sitting here getting mad about something stupid. You know, and of course we can't change every issue in the world. I can't stop every rapist or pedophile. I know I can't do that. Neither could Superman. Understand this. If you take this exercise, I want you to imagine you're Superman floating in front of, on top of Metropolis. You're just floating there and you hear every crime. You can't save them all. Not even as Superman. You got to pick one. All right, I got to go to that one. Well, that one's getting raped. I got this one as a baby. You got to make a choice. Even if you had that much power as Superman, you cannot save everyone. Every second somebody dies. literally, this whole podcast we've been doing, how many have died? Do the math. But at the same time, every second, someone's born, and sometimes multiple born because the twins and the things like this. So there's a whole world out there that is horrible, but also beautiful. You know, it's how you look at things. So I was looking at things very negatively, and that's what our enemies do. They demoralize us. They make us hate our police. They make us hate each other. They make us upset, depressed, and you cannot let them do that. Even though they have the upper hand right now, I will say this. It's inevitable that they won't. Nothing lasts forever. Nothing. No power structure, no form in the universe. Not even the universe itself is supposed to last forever, although it could. I don't know, but I'll tell you what. I always say this to people, like, in 7 billion years, the Earth won't be here. So, you know, we won't be alive for that probably, but nothing lasts forever. So what are you guys afraid of, you know? You know, I mean, I'd rather live a life of someone who's honest and open and not afraid of anything than a life of a coward. Because what life is that? You're suffering the whole time, then you die? You're going to die just like me, but I lived my life honestly and myself while others were scared, you know? But again, it might not be their place to be up front, and that's okay. Nothing wrong with that. So, yeah, man, I mean, you're right. You got to be easier on yourself. In a way, you have to love yourself. And I feel like a lot of people have begun to hate themselves. Because
Something I often do is I say, like, if someone will ask me for advice, and I say to them, well, what would you advise someone else in this situation? And that's actually a very, very useful technique, because they know exactly, it's obvious what advice they would give to someone else. So then the question is, well, why don't you just do it yourself? You obviously know what is the right thing to do. So the real question is, why aren't you just doing it? I think that's a very useful thing. It helps them to detach, is the point.
Well, you know, a thing is too, a lot of people are seeking for permission to be themselves. That's something I used to do. Like, oh man, well, I have this gut instinct, but let me see if it's right. And you ask like 5 different people, and then 3 of them say yes and 2 of them say no. And you're like, I don't know. Are they right? Are they right? You just got to try. And there's no way to avoid. Again, you cannot make a mistake on purpose, and it's inevitable you're going to fail. But winners are the people who fail so much, they just keep getting up and trying until they win. I mean, Michael Jordan, I bring this up on people. I say he didn't make his varsity team. He could have quit and be like, I suck, but he didn't. There are many stories like this. You know, people fail.
Oh, yeah. And again, that's something that I wish I'd known as a young adult. Like when I was 17, 18, I wish I'd known you are going to fail. The key thing is to get back up. You have to. Don't think that when you fail, that's the end of it. That means you're crap or whatever. That means you have now got to get back up. I think that, again, it's, you know, advice for the young, I guess.
Well, you know, I'm always learning, but I say it's not that you're a loser. It's your strategy is a losing strategy. That's it. It's not you. Like, I lose. When you think it's your ego, I suck and I suck at life. No, your strategy sucks. Fix your strategy. You'll get better at everything. That's all it is. Nothing's personal in a way. It's like you have to seriously just look at, what have I done? Ask yourself, how did I contribute to this? How can I fix this? You can't say, I don't have time for the gym. Say, how do I make time for the gym? I can't afford this thing. How can I afford it? What can I do? What can I cut off? Should I stop smoking? Should I stop buying this, you know, expensive burger every day? I mean, you can find a way. There's always, you got to ask the right questions. But I know I'm going everywhere with this. I mean, this is just what my mind does when I have no questions.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure whether you wanted me to intervene or not.
No, interject. I hope your audience is not like, what the fuck is this guy talking about?
No, I think you kept it relevant. I mean, you did go off, but you brought it back each time, so it's fine. I just wasn't sure if you wanted me to intervene more.
Any questions you got, my friend? Go ahead and take it from there.
All right. Well, there are a few super chats. So thank you for that, what would you say, that rap or that rant, these various avenues we've gone down. It's been very interesting, and I hope that people will find it useful.
Yeah, me too. I hope so too.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think there's a lot of wisdom in what Lucas has said. So, and I actually share a lot of it. As I've said during the stream. All right. So here are some questions. Hold on a second. Did you ever have any interaction with Patrick Little? He was also in the U.S. Marine Corps and possibly saw action in Fallujah.
No, I never spoke to him directly before. I've known of him. I've known of his stunts, and he was very upfront.
Yeah,
but I never personally spoke to the guy, though.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's a small world, and yet, you know, the movement, even in America, is quite small. It's like 1 degree of separation, and yet there are people who just have never talked, you know, and including you and me, in fact, until
right. 10 this has been 9 years since I spoke to you. It's bizarre. And this is the ninth millennial, right? This is your Christmas like month. Is that what this is? Like a Christmas?
Yeah.
So it took 9 years to get here. There you go.
I know. I'm sorry about that. Again,
oh, that's okay, man.
Partly because we just
it's all good.
Ships in the night, as it were. Okay. Let's see. What was the other one? So Patrick Little, and then do you have any thoughts on Gnosticism? I'm never quite sure. I've never looked into it. I don't know what it is exactly.
I think the Gnostics believe. Well, there's agnostic, meaning that they don't know, but the Gnostics believe that that there's a God. And that this world was made by the demiurge, which was like a force that was negative that made matter and made it imperfect and their suffering. And it came out of an abortion of Sophia, some weird shit like this. But they're saying they do know. Agnostic, I don't know if there's a God. They're saying we know the exact story, that this world was made by a demiurge that wasn't God. So this is not God's creation, and they're suffering and it's bad and something like that. I don't know much about it other than that. But yeah, they have their own like verge, Sophia, and there's some other thing. But
yeah, he also
it's kind of like Tron. You ever see the movie Tron?
Yeah.
So Jeff Bridges was like God, and then his clone wanted to make the world perfect, and he didn't make it right, and he was crazy. That's kind of like the demiurge.
Yeah, I think that's the sequel you're talking about. I've not seen that one, but I've seen the original from 82.
I've only seen the sequel. I've never seen the original.
Right. Yeah, the original's quite cool, but it's not a great film. All right, and then, hold on. Okay, this is Maxine Van Date. I'm from Ocean County myself. Did you hear of the Lakewood welfare scam? Dozens of millionaires collecting food stamps.
Oh, yeah. Our favorite tribes people do that a lot. They do that. They do the whole, they put their house, they make it a place of worship, so they have to pay property tax. Yeah, there's a lot of schemes, around there, and it's unfortunate that they do it. They do Section 8 housing and like, the welfare stuff. It's incredible what they get away with. Yeah.
Oh dear. All right, amazing. And he said nobody went to jail for it, apparently.
Nope.
All right, Diogenes. Hi, Woz. Thanks for the enduring holiday tradition and the excellent guest. Given his war experience, Lucas has moral authority over psychotic warmongers. Plus, he gives me good advice on Telegram. I remember him from YouTube with Cultured Thug. Glad he is back in the fight. Best Yuletide wishes to you both.
Thank you.
All right. And I don't know, says, we don't want to lord over anyone. We do need our overlords dethroned, however.
Correct.
Yes. Yep. And then I'm still Denise. I know her other name, but I'll just call her I'm still Denise. God bless you, Mr. Gage. You are right about the flow of the universe. Bless you, dear Woz. Thank you both so much for doing what you do. Oh, that's really nice. Thank you, Denise. There you
go. So my rambling meant something. Good.
Oh, yes. I think it was good. All right. I think that's everything then. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, sorry it took so long, but we've done it, and it was great. I really enjoyed this. So, Lucas Gage, thank you very much for appearing on Millennial.
It was a pleasure, my friend. Glad to talk to you finally. And you know, anytime we need a guest, if someone cancels, if you want to do something, let me know. I'm usually around, so I'm only a DM away or an email away. Yeah. And I hope the rest of your program for the rest of the month works out well, and everyone has a good time. And happy Millennial to you too.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.
I'll be back tomorrow night with Unity News Network, Gavin Bobby, Oren McIntyre, and Praise of Folly. It's a shame about Island Watch tonight, but there we go. Sometimes it happens. All right, everyone, I will see you tomorrow night. Bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The journey must continue, but it needs your help. Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero, and other cryptocurrencies are all very welcome. Find the info at millennial.com/crypto and make your donation. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the journey and spread the word.